Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 9th of October. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and I am joined in studio this morning by Rachel Sutton running the boards, one of the producers of the show, as well as Paul Perot in the newsroom, who has stacks of news to get through this morning and lots of great guests to get through that news with you. Glad you are listening as we start our day together, talking about these kinds of relevant news items and maybe some special interest topics with guests from all over our country, sometimes even internationally, and all of our guests share a real faith and a genuine hope that is what we want to bring to you each morning here on Faith Radio Mornings. And they may have some different angles. They may have some opinions that you agree with and that you disagree with, but we will be anchored in our same Christian faith. We'll be careful not to be discipled, as Bruce Ashford would say, by Fox News or CNN, but we will remain followers of Jesus together. Of course, you know, if you listen to the show, how much we love to hear from you during our 2 hours together. And so you can call or text the studio at any time, which is 877-933-2484. Again, that's 877-93-FAITH. Well, there certainly is no shortage of news to get to this morning, like most days, I suppose. I saw some headlines in the stacks of news on my desk that Paul put here. And one of them is that the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, is reaching out to, of all people, Pope Francis. An atheist country in North Korea would like to have a visit from the Pope and to visit Pyongyang at some point here in the next couple of months. Government spokesman confirmed today that the official invite would be delivered to the Pope by the South Korean president when he meets with Pope Francis next week in Europe. That should be pretty fascinating to watch. It's one of those invitations that signifies a greater role on the world stage, typically, when a world leader meets with the Pope. So I'm sure there's a lot of optics involved for the president of North Korea there. And then I see a pretty hopeful headline coming out of the Muslim world and in Jerusalem, that Christian and Jewish leaders are supporting the call by the Secretary General of the Muslim World League to travel to Jerusalem in a peace caravan. The Secretary General said that the peace caravan can help bridge the hate gap that exists on both sides. He said that peace, and this got my attention, agree with this, that peace can't be reached by more fighting and that neither Israelis or Palestinians are going away. So a way has to be found for them to live together. We'll see what happens there in the historic tension that has always been part of the city of Jerusalem. And of course, one final bit of news this morning is that pop star Taylor Swift seems to be getting a bit political. She usually doesn't chime in on this, but she announced in social media over the weekend that she'll be voting for the Democratic candidates for Congress in Tennessee. She took aim at Republican Senate candidate Marsha Blackburn, who says, quote, she is not willing to fight for the dignity of all Americans. Now, our president is not one who is going to shy away from a bit of controversy, so he decided to respond to the pop star here yesterday, telling reporters at the White House that he feels like Swift doesn't know anything about Blackburn, that Blackburn is a tremendous woman, and the president went on to say this.
Marsha Blackburn is doing a very good job in Tennessee. She's leading now substantially, which she should. She's a tremendous woman. I'm sure Taylor Swift has nothing or doesn't know anything about her, and let's say that I like Taylor's music about 25% less now, okay?
Which I suppose begs the question, how did you quantify how much you liked a pop star to begin with? But that's something I'm going to ask Tommy Binion, who's on the line already. Tommy is part of the Heritage Foundation, writes for the Daily Signal, and he joins me on Tuesday mornings. So we'll take a short break, and we will talk about many of these news items with Tommy Binion and more, and I will definitely get his perspective on whether he likes Taylor Swift 25% less next on Faith Radio Mornings.
I I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the Capitol City.
Well, that Schoolhouse Rock music means that Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation of the Daily Signal, who is on the line, joining me as he does on Tuesday mornings. Tommy, I don't know if you heard a bit about the supposed controversy or kerfuffle between Tay Swift and our president, but I know you're a pretty big Tay Swift fan, right?
Of course I am. You know, here's what confuses me. I am a Taylor Swift fan, and so I follow her closely, and I know that when she made the switch from country music to more pop music two albums ago, she moved to New York City. You know, she's got a song, Welcome to New York. I don't know why she's still voting in Tennessee. For all you listeners out there, you can't do that. You have to vote where you live. So anyways, I'm confused by the whole story from the beginning.
Well, Tommy, it doesn't stop Congress people from living in different, you know, states, and then they run in the state that they feel most electable in. You know what? Should it stop our pop stars from just deciding whatever state they want to vote in?
It stops us regular people. How about that? Us regular people, we're just following the laws. We're just voting where we had planted our roots. And, you know, I do like Taylor Swift's music. Our listeners know that I'm fond of the president. He nailed it. I like her music 25% less now. But I still like it quite a bit, even if it's 25% less.
I love it, Tommy. Well, thanks for joining me as you do on Faith Radio Mornings here on Tuesday mornings. Lots of news to get to. I don't know what the buzz was like out of Washington, D.C. last night, where we saw the ceremonial swearing in of Justice Kavanaugh. Quite a bit of just news headlines generated out of that, including the president deciding to comment during the swearing-in process, which was a little bit unusual, but he had this to say as he was addressing Justice Kavanaugh last night.
On behalf of our nation, I want to apologize to Brett and the entire Kavanaugh family for the terrible pain and suffering you have been forced to endure.
What did you think about the apology last night, Tommy? I mean, clearly Justice Kavanaugh was treated just brutally throughout the entire process in ways that other justices never have been. For the president to apologize was an interesting step last night.
Well, it is an acknowledgement that that this process was unusual, that it is that our politics have reached a new place. You don't. It would have been hard to fathom a president having put a justice on the court apologizing for the way in which that happened 6 months ago. But our politics have reached a new place. So, I rather than comment on sort of what the president said, I just think it's interesting that he felt compelled to do that. I think it's sad that he felt compelled to do it. And by the way, it's not the president that owes him an apology. I'm very proud that the president stood by Justice Kavanaugh. You know, that was no guarantee. It didn't look good there for a while, and it's just President Trump's stubbornness and stick-to-itiveness that may be the reason that Kavanaugh is on the court today, probably walking through the court's doors for his first day of work as we speak. I think Kavanaugh owes Trump a thank you for sticking with him.
I think a lot of the analysis that I read, Tommy, was just exactly that. What you had mentioned is that many past presidents, either Republican or Democrat, would have likely folded in the face of what was happening at that point. So this is consistent with the president's character, certainly over his 18, 24 months in office. Now, it's interesting to hear what Justice Kavanaugh had to say after President Trump apologized in that way. And we're hopefully then signaling a shift in which we get back to matters of jurisprudence as opposed to all this politics. Here's Justice Kavanaugh.
It did not change me. My approach to judging remains the same. A good judge must be an umpire, a neutral and impartial decider who favors no litigant or policy.
It's part of the importance of a lifetime appointment, isn't it, Tommy, that however you get there through whichever political vein, at that point when you put on the robe, you need to be as impartial as possible.
Oh, that's exactly right. I think Kavanaugh is our 114th Supreme Court justice. He will be an impartial, independent judge. We always have judges that are nominated and confirmed by this political process, and then they are expected to be impartial. You know, throughout this process, people were alleging that Kavanaugh would be loyal to Trump or, you know, somehow a compromised justice because of the political way that this process went. That is how the framers designed it. I expect that Kavanaugh will be that impartial, independent justice. He's got a lifetime appointment now. His work starts today. And throughout his tenure, he's going to look at landmark cases that change the course of our nation. I just don't think that Kavanaugh is going to be thinking about senators and presidents and who's up and who's down in the political horse race as he's making those decisions. That's not, I don't think, in the character of the judge that we've gotten to know over the last 90 days or so.
Well, certainly prior to all these hearings, he was a very well-established judge in the D.C. Circuit Courts. And moving forward, it seems like the Democrats, if they continue to pursue this, and you're hearing talk of impeachment and get him out of office, I don't know, Tommy, that seems like a losing argument moving forward.
I would think so. I don't think the voters appreciate sore losers. I don't think that they're willing to sort of make everything that's at stake in our politics, whether it be for the congressional midterms, for the 2020 presidential race, I don't think they're willing to boil that down to these allegations from Christine Blasey Ford. I think American people want their elections to be about more than that. And to me, that's why ultimately this isn't going to happen, that the Democrats are going to leave this alone, is that I don't think it's going to be a political winner for them. And they'll see that, and hopefully they will move on to the things that are important. After all, this is why President Trump won. He focused not on what the news said was the most important issues, but what the people were saying were the most important issues. That's how he won the election. I think Democrats have learned that lesson, and they're going to focus on what's important.
Well, and certainly we've seen a closing of the enthusiasm gap for voting between the Republican and Democratic parties, whereas prior to the confirmation proceedings, there was about a 12 percentage point lead for the Democrats in the expectation they would head to the booth with some excitement. But that gap's been closed, so it really is a losing argument for the Democrats.
No, I think that's right. There's a really big question floating around D.C. People are having in conversations with themselves. Both sides are seeing an electoral effect for the Kavanaugh confirmation process. Both sides are seeing the polls move slightly. The question is, will it last? You know, today is October 9th. The election is less than a month away, but it's still about a month away. Will it last? That is a lifetime in politics, a whole month. So I'm not sure that we're still going to be talking about Kavanaugh when we get to Election Day. We'll see, but who knows what else could come up with North Korea or the president's Twitter feed or with the economy. There's so much else going on that could supplant it from being in the news by then.
Certainly 2 hours is a lifetime in the political cycles these days. That's Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation and with the Daily Signal. And Tommy, when we come back from break, we'll change the conversation over to some concern about our national debt and even maybe the possibility of another summit between our president and the North Korean president. But before we head to break here, Tommy, or as we're heading to break, just for you, we're going to give you a little taste, Swift, because I know how much you like her, even though it's 25% less.
Bad blood, you know it used to be mad love, so take a look what you've done.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We're joined here on this Tuesday morning by Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation. Certainly enjoy our conversations. Tommy, anything from Justice Kavanaugh to President Trump to Taylor Swift. I did see some headlines that our national debt seems to be of increasing concern. And that's a little interesting and maybe confusing to me, because isn't the economy roaring at this historic rate? How are we building more debt here, Tommy?
Well, the simple answer is spending. The economy is roaring, and we have not reined in our spending for decades. This president has accomplished a lot. The 115th Congress has accomplished a lot. The very most disappointing thing that they've done is that they've increased spending by hundreds of billions of dollars for discretionary spending last year and again this year. It is a completely unsustainable path. The tax cuts that have caused growth, it is not enough growth to overcome that amount of spending. There needs to be a wake-up call there is not the political will, there is not the political conscience to rein in spending at the moment. There was in 2010, the Tea Party, the fiscal responsible flavor to the Tea Party caused some reforms. Those have since faded away, and the spending picture and the politics, frankly, around the spending picture, people just aren't tuned into this as much as they should be, and it's not driving their voting behavior as much as it should be, and the result is runaway spending.
So it sounds like this is actually maybe a bipartisan issue in the sense that both Republicans and Democrats have failed to rein in spending for a very long period of time.
Absolutely. When Democrats are in control and when Republicans are in control, they spend on different priorities, but both parties are practicing deficit spending to disastrous levels. One thing that happens, and it's this is politics at its worst. The president and the Republicans in Congress wanted to fully fund the U.S. military. Obviously, we want a cutting-edge, state-of-the-art, powerful military, and that's expensive. And when Republicans wanted to raise spending on the military, the Democrats said, sure, you can raise spending however much you want, but every additional dime you spend on the military, we want that amount of money for domestic spending. It wasn't that there were certain priorities they wanted spending. They just wanted that money for them. So they struck a deal. $100 billion for you, $100 billion for me. We'll call it a day. It's completely unnecessary. It's spending for spending's sake. And eventually, there will be a debt crisis in this country if we stay on this path. And that will be a disaster for the economy. If there's one thing that can derail this illustrious economy that we have now, it's a debt crisis.
Well, and how much does the idea of the reelection cycle play into this, where Congress people are constantly in the election cycle, and so they do have to play to the special interests or the people that do want some of the money? I hear, Tommy, sometimes people saying if we just had term limits, that would resolve so much of this because they wouldn't be forced to vote according to their constituency as much. They'd be more representative. Do you think term limits would be helpful at all, or is that just a non sequitur?
In that context alone, I think that term limits would be fine. There are some dangers and some big downsides to term limits that we have to understand. The apparatuses around Congress are very powerful and very strong. The staff, the clerks, the parliamentarians, these are people completely unelected and unaccountable that hold a lot of power. If you've got every year a completely new crop of congressmen, nobody who knows how the place works, those apparatuses, those staff, the parliamentarians, the clerks, they're going to be even more powerful and less accountable to the people. So I worry about term limits for that reason. You're absolutely right. The politics of being reelected is part of the reason the spending picture is so frustrating. But I think the right place to look for a solution is to make the politics work for us. The fiscal conservatives out there have got to make their voices heard. People have got to let their representatives know they care about the fiscal solvency and responsibility of this nation. Ultimately, that's the only thing that's going to change the behavior of their members is if the people demand it.
Well, Tommy, I just can't imagine why you can't just grab your Microsoft Excel spreadsheet. You work with the executive branch of government and just walk in and show them the numbers. It's a bit red at the end of the column, isn't it?
It absolutely is, and people do that all the time. The Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, is known for sort of pushing his glasses up his nose and breaking out the charts. It's right or wrong, it's just not one of those issues that really is electric in terms of the politics. And so when you do that, and I've done it, when you break out your Excel spreadsheet, there is a glaze that goes over people's eyes, and they say, yeah, I've heard it all before, but we need this spending. And it's like beating your head against a wall. And hopefully the fiscal conservatives will come back with a vengeance and make their voices heard.
We have just about a minute left here, Tommy. One last topic is we see that there's rumblings for a second summit between the president of North Korea and our president. Do you see that happening here in the near future?
I don't know how near, Certainly Pompeo said it was getting closer. And there are yet still a lot of details to be worked out. There are several steps left in this process before a second summit could happen, and then there are more steps after that before a peace accord could happen. I think that the president should be wary of advancing that process too quickly. I like what Ronald Reagan said about trust but verify. Verification is something that happens over time. We should be very skeptical of the North Korean regime. President Trump is doing absolutely the right thing by working with them, but you've got to be skeptical and you've got to take it slow to make sure that what they say they're doing. So let's be careful. Let's move at an appropriate speed. We will see if it becomes a rush process, if there's a second summit, if there's a peace accord at some point. I think it's time to pump the brakes and do a little trusting and verifying.
Sami Benin of the Heritage Foundation. Tommy, we certainly appreciate your time coming on as you do on Tuesday mornings, talking through these headlines. And if you can sometime later this week, text me your top five Taylor Swift songs, if you wouldn't mind.
You betcha. Will do.
Have a great week, Tommy.
See you.
We'll take a break here for Lighten Up and bottom of the hour news. And in the second half of this hour, we're going to be joined by Dr. Rosemary Stein. And we'll talk a bit about how significant the impact pot is on the teenage brain, even when compared to alcohol. So it should be a good conversation with Rosemary Stein later this morning on Faith Radio Mornings. Well, looking at some of the news here, I would think that it is increasingly easy to be a weather person in the Midwest. All you have to do is just stand up and say it's going to rain. And everywhere I look here in the news, it looks like Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, rain, rain, rain. I'm thinking of investing in the marine industry as future means of transportation as opposed to the automobile. So we'll see how this goes. Some of us, though, if you're listening in Hartford, Connecticut, those of us in the Midwest, we're going to be joining you after the show. It's going to be 75 and sunny in your neck of the woods. What a great gift for that day. Well, we'll take a break here for some more news, and then when we come back, I'll be joined by Dr. Rosemary Stein, and we'll talk a lot about what it means to parent our kids from a psychological, social, and physical standpoint. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by 16-year NFL veteran and current Carolina Panthers color commentator Eugene Robinson, and he was giving us some insight about how sports can help test our Christian values and grow stronger in them.
You got to obey the rules, man. Romans 13 is really implicit. I mean, it's really explicit about you obeying the rules and obeying your governing authority. And you have to do that because there's oftentimes in a football game, there's oftentimes when you want to go ahead and do your own thing because somebody did you wrong in the game and you want to go ahead and take revenge. I'm a high school coach. I saw it with a couple of my guys the other day in the high school football game where a guy started hitting a guy and he started cursing at one of my players and he wanted to take revenge. And I had to remind him, I said, hey, dude, it's the easiest thing is to do that because you feel that you've been assaulted and you feel that you've been wrong. I said the hardest thing right now is to obey the government authorities and to not do what your impulse is telling you they're going to do. If I can give you anything of pause, is, hey, think about what you're about to do right now. I'm going to tell you as your coach, hey, man, play the game the right way and don't get into that banter. Don't get into no fisticuffs. Football will test you. It will test your moral fiber. It will test your constitution because there's plenty of times when you want to take matters into your own hands. And I'm telling you, based on what I know from the Lord, don't do it.
Boy, Eugene certainly had some pretty compelling stories yesterday from his time in the NFL. He's currently a high school football coach and just what it means to be a coach or a teacher and helping shape the character of young people today. If you want to catch that entire segment, go to myfaithradio.com. I highly recommend it. So we have Rosemary Stein, a physician from the East Coast of the United States, who joins me every couple of weeks here on Faith Radio Mornings. And Rosemary and I are going to talk a bit about the impact that marijuana has on the teenage brain. So it should be an interesting conversation next with Rosemary Stein.
Despite what many would have you believe, the Bible was important to the founding fathers of America. This is Jim Garlow. In 1781, Robert Aiken, the official printer of the Continental Congress, asked Congress for permission to print Bibles on his presses in Philadelphia. Congress approved his request and appointed a congressional committee to oversee the project. On September the 12th, 1782, Aiken's Bible received the approval of the full Congress. Printed in the front of the Bible was this endorsement: resolved that the United States and Congress assembled recommend this edition of the Bible to the inhabitants of the United States. Commenting on the resolution, one historian wrote, "Who will call in question the assertion that this is a Bible nation?" and added, "The first Congress assumed the rights and performed the duties of a Bible society long before such an institution existed." This is Jim Garlow.
For a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, the medicine go down, medicine go down, just a spoonful.
And that Mary Poppins music means that Dr. Rosemary Stein is joining us here on Faith Radio Mornings, as she does about every other week, to talk through many of the realities in our world today that may be impacting families and our kids. And Dr. Stein runs a physician practice that focuses not just on the physical needs of kids, but also on their sociological, psychological, and spiritual needs. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
Well, we love having you on the program, and certainly I'm always pretty interested in some of the different topics that are sent my way relative to what we can talk about. And, you know, marijuana is obviously increasingly in the headlines. I see that up in Canada, they're very close to passing legislation in which it will be passed for recreational usage, not just medicinal usage. And that, of course, is a state-by-state conversation that's happening in the United States as well. People seem to be touting the health benefits of it, that it could replace opioids in our country, all of these positive benefits of marijuana. Is there some notes of caution we should exercise in this, Rosemary?
Absolutely. With anything that has potential, there is a lot to think about and a lot of caution to be had, but particularly with marijuana. I think we were probably a little closer to the truth when in the 70s and 60s and 70s when we knew that, especially for youth, and not talking about medical use of marijuana, but recreational use particularly, it's not going to be good for the young person's brain. And there's so many studies that point to the fact that when a kid is using marijuana, especially when he or she is using it on a regular basis, there's cognition, there's brain use that decreases, and it cannot be restored once that brain utilization is disrupted in the child. And if you talk to a kid that is using marijuana, let's say at least once a week, you'll see that they have a problem with recall. They pause between their words. They're not able to bring up that next word that is going to put their thoughts together. That's something that youth should have when they're 60 or 70, older people like me, not 18. When you're 18, you should be speaking kind of quickly. You should be wanting to figure things out. You shouldn't have to pause between words. And if that's the way a kid starts his or her life, just imagine how that's going to break down by the time that kid gets to 50 and 60. And we get to see those older people also, not only in our the medical practice, but as parents who are just not able to think because of what they did when they were 16 or 17 or 18.
Well, and the way you describe it, Rosemary, I mean, what about this is just sort of common sense in terms of our analysis of the impact of pot? Because I know that there's this sense, well, we better launch 3 or 5 or 7 year longitudinal studies with thousands of people. But I think any of us that have been with people that smoke marijuana and see just the impact, just anecdotally, it's kind of just common sense that it has a pretty significant impact.
Absolutely. I think we're doing the opposite, and we're throwing out the bathwater and keeping a minuscule, not even a little teeny weeny doll that's an inch tall. In other words, we're really not looking at the truth of the matter. We're taking what might be a little bit good and saying, well, this whole other spectrum of bad, it just doesn't exist because look how wonderful it can be. I have still to find that one patient in 25 years of practice within 5,000 patients that belong to our practice. I still have to find that one patient that marijuana, even medically, could have saved from something terrible. And that's not to say that doesn't exist, but I think that we're we're deciding something based on that one patient that may benefit from marijuana, and then we might be harming hundreds of thousands of children, because what we're saying is marijuana is not so bad. Marijuana is actually pretty good, and it might be good on the brain. And we have to take a lot of caution when we send these messages to kids, because it will allow them, will give them a door to a behavior that's going to be harmful to them.
Hmm. Is there a case to be made for more of a medicinal approach to marijuana? I think recreationally we can all agree that it's going to have an impact that maybe we would want to avoid. But medicinally, I hear some rumblings that it could replace the opioid way of managing chronic pain. Maybe if somebody has fibromyalgia or cancer or something that's causing great pain in their lives, and opioids then creates a different kind of havoc in their life, could marijuana replace sort of the management of chronic pain?
I think that eventually it will. I don't know that. I think that we're getting into from one big wheelbarrow of everything that falls into it and going right into another one. And we're going to find a whole grouping of other problems. I think that most likely we're going to be headed that way, whether people admit to it or want it to happen or not. It probably is in some ways less harmful. And I do think that it seems like it helps with seizure sort of activity from what I've seen, at least anecdotally. But in the long run, I think that I would use a lot of caution and, of course, a lot of prayer before I consider that is how I want to resolve my problems with the pain that I'm having. Not that there isn't great pain that people are experiencing, but personally, I would say that before I were to engage in marijuana use for pain, I would personally do a lot of praying. I would be praying for my family members that would be observing what I'm doing before I did that. And I think that would be a good approach for each one of us, whether, we're in the medical community or we're just, normal Christian living out our lives.
So do you have any tips for parents and families? I have to believe that we have to anticipate that our young people are increasingly going to be approached with the possibility of purchasing and then smoking marijuana. I know it was out of the mainstream when I was growing up. I was approached one time in downtown Minneapolis, and it was just a quick conversation. I was able to beg off and walk away. But it seems like that might be increasingly common, whether it's in schools or people's homes. What do you suggest for parents in terms of helping their kids be on the lookout?
Well, the first thing is be very open. Don't think that if I don't talk about it and I say I don't want it, that it's just not going to happen. You just have to understand that youth is going to do lots of time what youth is going to do. Obviously, once again, go back to the Lord and pray, because these are the people you love the most, your kids, your family. You just love them, and so cover them with prayer so that they are able to resist temptation. But speak to them and show them the studies and say, I don't want this to happen to you. But, Mom, it's okay. Other people smoke weed and they're fine. Well, let me show you these other people, and have people already in your brain, in your mind of when you were a youth. And you're absolutely right. The kids are in a very different environment. Hannah just came to me last week. She said that she has a friend from chemistry who said, hey, you want some weed? And she was very surprised, because this kid is a college athlete. He's a good student. And so she was rather taken aback that this kid that looks like a good kid just openly offered her marijuana. Your kid is most likely going to be approached, and you need to sort of coach them, mold them with the proper responses, but with the proper facts. The truth will set you free.
Talking with Rosemary Stein here on Faith Radio Mornings, as we do often, just talking about issues of parenting with our kids, and not just from a physical standpoint, but also from a psychological and spiritual one. Rosemary, when we come back from break, I'll have to ask you some questions about some updated studies done on the impact of screen time, specifically screen time and violence, and how that might affect our kids. And then also, too, we'll get into the use of screen time in terms of how it affects our cognition. So lots to get into next with Rosemary Stein. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Peter Kapsner, and we're delighted to be joined on the line here in studio by Dr. Rosemary Stein. And we just discussed different issues related to our kids and young people and the kinds of things they have to navigate in the world today. And Rosemary, I know that there's always been some, there's increasing studies about the impact of video games. And specifically, the question that I've had for quite some time is there a correlation between violent video games and violent behavior? And I think about these first-person shooter games that are so common. And does it have an impact on any youth, or are there certain kind of youth? Because I think some people would suggest, well, for kids on the autistic spectrum, they might not be able to differentiate between fantasy and reality. Or is the impact of violent video games, does it affect all of us?
Well, in the study that we were reading about from Health Day Reporter, it seems to suggest that there is a slight increase in aggressive behavior in children that are playing some aggressive or violent games. But if you think about how the child's brain works and how kids are prompted and how they develop in their behaviors, I would guess that if you did a more specific study, that you're going to find that kids' behaviors are more than just slightly affected by playing aggressive video games. Because you can mold a child's behavior by what they're exposed. Because all these nerve cells, all this brain matter is just really starting to form itself and be prompted by their environment. Well, if aggressive whatever, it doesn't matter. It can be video games. It can be reading. We've always said you are taking a book and you're putting it inside yourself, and that will affect you the rest of your lives. Well, even more so when you are the person who is involved in killing or in shooting, something down. That is going to, in a child, not an adult, but it's going to become part of who they are. There is no way around that a kid is going to become more aggressively inclined by playing a video game from what I've seen in kids. I'm not saying that they're going to be horrible people, that they're going to be sociopathic killers, but I'm saying that their behavior will be more aggressive. They're going to accept aggressive or violent environments more easily because that's the nature of a child and a child's brain.
Well, my understanding is that the brain has quite a bit of plasticity to it. It's very malleable. And so the kinds of environmental influences that enter into our brain does create patterns and does shift how we think and how we perceive of the world and other people.
And so much more with a child. We were just talking about marijuana and drug use and how it affects a child. We have to stop thinking that children are little adults. They're not. They're very unique in the way that they're made up. They have imagination. While if you were an adult and you see somebody in your closet, you're crazy. If it's a child, it's an imagination. Children's minds are completely different because they are brains that are in building, but they're very unique in the way they can absorb information. So you expose kids to aggressive, almost lifelike behavior, and they're going to become a part of what they see.
It's Dr. Rosemary Stein. And Rosemary, we've just got a couple minutes left here. And thinking about just this issue with video games, it raises the bigger issue that parenting is increasingly challenging, it feels like, as we move forward in our country and in our neighborhoods. And there was a pretty interesting admission from a left-leaning New York Times columnist, David Leinhardt, who was commenting in some of the studies that have come out recently about the importance of having two-parent families, just because it can be so challenging. He writes that all else being equal, income, race, or educational outcomes, children who grow up in neighborhoods with fewer two-parent families fare notably worse. And he says, I want to highlight this result because I think that my half of the political spectrum too often dismisses the importance of family structure when viewed objectively, that all the evidence points strongly to the value of two-parent households. And certainly I can't imagine trying to raise our five kids just alone. And there's so many heroic single parents out there doing just that. But it does speak to the need of lots of hands on deck to help parent our kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting reading the article because it's taken from a much more liberal perspective than most Christian worldview would have. But But it makes a lot of sense. And God didn't create the family by mistake. So that the more loving hands involve loving hands that are unconditionally loving that child, the better that child will do. But when you have the benefit of the balance between a male and a female, I truly believe that that child does better. In the end, even when a kid makes a mistake at the practice, I can see when that child grew up in a mom-dad home that would bounce things off of each other, that child does best. Even among my teenagers, my female teenagers that kept pregnant at 16 or 17, I don't lose hope because I know that that young lady grew up in a good home and she's going to be loved and accepted. And the other thing is that she has examples that she's going to point to how to raise her child. And that child winds up doing so much better than if she had only a mom. We can't change these circumstances, but we can be the people many times that accept when our daughters or our granddaughters do make mistakes. They do get pregnant. They do have to raise their children in single family homes. And we can be the mom and the dad and the granddad that surround that child and that single mom so that they have the right exposure. We have to be very forgiving, very loving, and have that kind of unconditionally accepting spirit.
Great words of advice from Dr. Rosemary Stein. Really appreciate your time here each week on Faith Radio Mornings. I know our listeners love to hear from you and parenting tips. So have a great week ahead, Rosemary.
Thank you so much.
We'll take a break here, and then we'll wrap up the first hour of our show and preview what's coming next on Faith Radio Mornings. Fun and informative Tuesday morning with Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation, as well as Rosemary Stein talking about issues of parenting with our kids. Well, up next in the second hour of the show, we'll be joined first by Greg Coleman, the punter for the Minnesota Vikings. We'll talk a little bit about faith in sports and in the NFL.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.